929-477.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, February 4th, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. Chet, there's been a little bit of football that took place on Sunday in Super Bowl 49, and it certainly didn't disappoint. It'd be interesting to see your point of view on that and what our special guest, former Eagles linebacker and present pre- and post-game Eagles broadcaster and motivational speaker Kevin Riley thinks about the turn of events that led the Seattle Seahawks taking what looked like a sure victory into a loss for the ages.
Oh, man, a great game, a crazy controversial finish, and, yeah, a play that will be remembered forever by Seahawks and Patriots fans for sure. Can't wait to get Kevin's thoughts about all of it, as well as his take on the Eagles' recent front office moves and off-season plans.
Yep. Good to have you back, Kevin. We want to run one thing out right quick, and then we got a quick question for you before we get talking about some football. So let's get our trivia question out there for our listeners. We'll be giving away the Gino Marchetti signed 8x10 black and white photo courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown to the first person that calls in and correctly answers the question. Our shopforkisses.org phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855, so feel free to give us a call throughout the show. Our question for tonight, Chet, this is easier than all the easy ones. As we know, the Eagles have played in two Super Bowls. Who is the team's all-time receiving yards leader in those Super Bowls?
Okay, again, I think I got that one.
Our call in to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. Kevin, welcome back, my friend.
Hey, glad to be with you guys on this cold night.
Yeah, well, it's not quite so cold where I am, but I appreciate your pain. We're getting ready for spring training down here in the sunshine.
Oh, what can I say?
Hey, before we get started talking Super Bowl and Eagles and everything else, I had a question I wanted to ask you, and I saw where you did a motivational speech or whatever you want to call it, talk for the Baltimore Ravens. I wanted to ask you about that and some of the other motivational speaking things you have going on, because I know you're very busy, especially now that football's over.
Yeah, that was you talk about catching sunlight in a bottle. John Harbaugh and I became friends when he was the quarterback coach up here with the Eagles, and they would send him out on speaking engagements, and he and I probably did two or three together. And we became friends. I was a special teamer. I really thought he was doing a great job. He was a young guy, and, wasn't unusual for us to have a beer after one of the speaking engagements. So I've been a big fan of his since he's been in Baltimore. And he just thought that the team during, summer camp could use a little lift. They had a tough off season with injuries. They lost some key personnel and then the Ray Rice thing. And so John asked me to come down and give my little motivational speech, and he said, "Kev, I can give you 5 or 6 minutes. I said, "John, I can't say my name in that time." I said, "You got to give me 12. And boy, I know these guys are wanting to get off the field. And, they were going through some tough times there with the media and stuff. And so it went really, really well. And ESPN was down there. I had to hustle home because, believe it or not, I had dinner with Coach Vermeil that night. And I couldn't stay to see the facility. And by the way, the Ravens have an unbelievable facility down there. And so ESPN was there because of the Ray Rice issue, and, of course, the first three questions were directed at John Harbaugh about what was going to happen, this, that, and the other. And Stan White, who's a friend of mine and played many years, as you know, as a linebacker with the Colts, he's a radio analyst, and he got John off the hook by asking him. He said, "I heard you had a special guest after practice." And here John gives about a 67 endorsement of my talk, just, you know, glad to get a segue off of the, you know, the hot topic of Ray Rice. And I'm getting phone calls from all over the country because people are watching this. And, you know, he's mentioning my name in the talk I gave. So, you know, I happened to get the original from ESPN. I got some friends up there, and we posted it, and it's been really nice to have that happen. Didn't expect it, but it was real nice. And speaking of that, that's what I'm doing this off season. I've got about 15 gigs from the first of the year to St. Patty's Day, and then I'm taking a break. So I'm all over the country with it. I love doing it. And if anybody wants to, you know, look at my website, if you go on www.kreilly.com, all the information's there for you to know. So that's it in a nutshell, and I love doing it, guys.
Fantastic. It looked like the little bit I got to read on it, I guess there was an article I saw, and then there were some Facebook postings about it. It looked like it was really cool.
You know, it surprised. Sometimes when I get down like that, you know, and I feel like the older veteran now, and, you know, these are young kids. Some of their parents weren't for when I was playing. And you know, you wonder if you're going to get through to them. You know, you wonder if you're going to make an impact. And I got to tell you, I've got, you know, not that I love having this, but I have the greatest visual in the world with missing an arm. And these guys are all concerned about injuries now. And I just wanted to tell them that they got to make sure that, you know, they take care of themselves right now. And also that, you know, they take advantage of the situation while their names are hot. Because once you get out of the league, people will forget you in a heartbeat. The time to make the relationships and the connections and, you know, do some really good charity work is why you have that name and you're playing. Because then people recognize you and they feel like they owe you a little bit and you're a good guy. So that was part of my advice. And I got to tell you, probably about 20 of them came up to me after practice and, you know, I'm holding them up from getting their Gatorade and thanked me for coming down, which really surprised me, but it made me really feel good too.
Well, you know, that leads into a question I was actually going to ask you at the very end, but you kind of led me into it. I'm looking this morning or this afternoon on ESPN. I was looking up some stats on the Flyers for us to talk about a little bit later on. But, you know, I look at the main headlines on ESPN, and, you know, we already have the deflated ball nonsense, but we got Browns face tech sanctions, Packers DT arrested for gun pot and $190,000, Cowboys running back Randall arrested again. Colts Jackson arrested over parking spot spat. I mean, what is it with these guys, and what can we do?
You forgot Warren Sapp.
Well, and yeah, that wasn't even today. Yeah, then you have
and Johnny
Sapp
Manziel in rehab.
Great topic you bring up, and I'll give you my take on it. And, you know, after the Super Bowl, guys, you remember where there wasn't anything going on for 4 weeks. You didn't hear anything about the NFL. You know, everybody was starting to look forward to the college basketball and the beginnings of March Madness. And, gosh, 2 days after, you've got all these things out there on the wire, and they continued again today. You know, here's my cut on it, and I did 30 years with Xerox as an executive, and I got to tell you, we were one of the best-trained companies in the world. I figured that I did in my 30 years, I figured out from my portfolio that I probably did 50-some weeks of training, some of which I gave myself, but mostly they had us trained on everything. They had us trained on value and diversity, sexual harassment, managing people, leadership, where to draw the lines. And I got to tell you, these young kids that are coming out of college, not just the athletes, but a lot of them are on a steady diet of Howard Stern, and they get into the real world, and that's not acceptable language. It's not acceptable behavior, you know, when you're an adult. And I got to say that the NFL now, the billion-dollar corporation it is, needs help in the way of training, not only from the standpoint of the players. The coaches need some of this training because there are some old-school guys that get into trouble with that stuff. And I feel bad for Goodell. Here's a guy that's – I shouldn't feel bad for him with the money he's making, but here he is, you know, a president of the NFL, and not be having to handle human relation problems and making it up as he goes along. They should have a human relations team of people that, you know, are able to address these issues that they have when they come up and give them proper advice. And I also believe that the NFL for years has been working without an outside public relation firm, that when they have these kind of situations, they can have somebody come in and, you know, put the fires out or diminish the damage. They have nobody that gives damage control. And the way they've handled some of the things this year is just purely, I don't think it was meant to happen. It was lack of training, lack of knowing what to do in these situations, because a lot of it's new ground for Goodell and the rest of the staff.
Kevin, you've got that right. A lot of problems off the field, but still a great product on the field. And that includes the very entertaining Super Bowl that we just saw. So let's get right to it on that front. What a game. The Patriots coming back from 10 points down in the final quarter to take the lead, but then it looked like the Seahawks would retake the lead in the final minute after a crazy catch by Jermaine Kearse and the run by Marshawn Lynch that left Seattle with a second and goal from the one-yard line, which set up the play call that many experts are calling, given the situation and the magnitude of the game, one of the worst play calls ever. What's your view of that?
Well, first of all, I want to just say that you are absolutely right. You know, in spite of all the problems the NFL has had, that game had a 50% share, 49.7, or almost 50. And in Boston, it was 61. Two all-time highs, two record setters. So the game is as popular as it ever was. That gave everybody their money's worth. You know, there's been a lot of arguments made. I'll try to put one new light on this. I can imagine being, and I talked to my good friend John Bunning, who I respect tremendously. We're good friends. He's coached at the high school, college, and pro level. And we were talking about what must the offensive 11 for the Seahawks have thought when that play came in. And I can tell you, it probably took some of the wind out of their sails. They were probably, you know, what the heck? Are you kidding me? And you know what? When you're not confident that a play is going to work, you don't give your best effort. And that is another piece that just goes along with that. Whether or not that happened, I don't know. But I'll bet it did. I'll bet these guys were thinking, you got to be kidding me, because I can just picture, you know, Lynch almost got in on his own on the carry. And they were a foot away, and I'm thinking, well, I wonder if the Patriots let him walk in now, at least to give Brady 25 seconds to try to do something. That was my thought. And when I saw this pass play, so many things can go wrong, especially a slant pattern, a tip ball, you know, and this one here, was it just didn't look like the receiver sold out. And that brings me back to, was everybody really comfortable with this? Or would they have been more comfortable with button your chin straps, dig in? And Marshawn Lynch didn't take a back step in the last five games I've seen him play. So I can't imagine that he would have missed on two carries from a foot out. And I still don't understand that. I just think they got too cute.
Yeah, I agree absolutely. I mean, why not go with the best goal line runner in the game? And you have a couple of cracks at it. You still have a timeout. I just didn't get it.
You know, give Butler credit for still being alert and playing a defensive back position. A lot of guys would have assumed that was going to be the run and would have been running toward the line of scrimmage to try to, you know, get to Lynch. And he was still doing his duty, playing the job. And I don't think they counted on that. So you got to give him some credit.
Yeah, I was yelling at my TV wondering why Belichick wasn't calling timeout there 52 seconds or something like that. He was going to let the game end on the play that they ran into the end zone, it looked like.
Really, I mean, I thought that he did that also. I, you know, you almost have to say, let them score, you know, especially when they got down to the one. If, you know, if anybody could manufacture something in 25 seconds with a timeout left, it would have been, you know, Tom Brady, but even that would have been suspect. But I don't know. I mean, you talk about taking, you know, defeat from the jaws of victory. That was it. And the only thing that good that came out of it for the miracle in the Meadowlands is that's now the second dumbest play in football.
Yeah, right. Hey, Kevin, we saw your Facebook rant over the weekend when you explained that you just couldn't root for the Patriots this past Sunday. Explain your stance for our listeners.
Well, you know, I've been watching the things that they do, and I'm going to dime a guy for you guys, and I was on the radio with Danny Klecko, and boy, what a guy, what a ball player. He's got two Super Bowl rings. He was in the huddle with Peyton Manning. He was in the huddle with Tom Brady. He was in the huddle with Donovan McNabb. I asked him one day which one of those guys did more film study, and he said, without a doubt, Tom Brady. He said Tom Brady is one of those guys that just is afraid that, you know, the magic will go away and works harder every day and every year, which surprised me a little bit. I thought Peyton Manning was going to be his answer. But, you know, he didn't have a whole lot of respect for Belichick and the way he ran his ran the team. And that might have been a little sour grapes because he left there, you know. But I just watch the things they do. I also think that something happened during the Eagles' 2004 Super Bowl. They were way too prepared, the Patriots were, to defend some new things that the Eagles put in offensively. And we'll never know. But, you know, now you got the Browns, you know, beefing up their speaker to put extra crowd noise in. Guys, you know, it needs to stop because the integrity of this game will affect the popularity of it if they continue on this stance. But I just believe they do a couple shady things, and I just couldn't root for them.
Interesting. Well, hey, we ran on our Facebook pages the other day, I ran a little thing and got, I think there was like 125 responses. So I wanted to throw this at you and get your response and see what you think. I asked everybody who they thought, after the Super Bowl, who they thought were the top five greatest quarterbacks of all time. Can you stab at that?
Yes, I got to put Tom Brady there. I've got to put Peyton Manning there. I got to put Johnny Unitas there just because he was such a great player during the clutch. Joe Montana would be in that group, no doubt about it. Boy, and you get down, you could throw a blanket over the fifth one. He never won a Super Bowl, but, boy, I don't know anybody that could throw up more yards per game than Dan Marino down there with the Dolphins. So
yep.
If I had to go, that's the group I'd go with.
That was pretty much the consensus. We had the older guys. We had a few Otto Grahams from somebody that I never saw play, but I did see Unitas as a kid. But that was pretty much the five. Jim Kelly was in there. Dan Fouts was in there. You know, there were a bunch of names, Steve Young, Brett Favre. They were all thrown in there by different people as their favorites, but those five pretty much were the five in some order.
Yeah, I put Montana ahead of Brady just because Montana was 4-for-4 in Super Bowls. So I give him the slight edge.
Yeah, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Tom Brady has probably done more with less, though, than any of them. He just, you know, he makes 1,000-yard receivers out of guys nobody ever heard of.
Yeah, and part of that, point. You know, part of it's Tom Brady and his study habits, and the other part is their system. You know, mm-hmm. they believed in interchangeable parts before we even knew the name Chip Kelly.
That's right.
Hey, Kevin, we want to talk to you about what the Eagles have been up to since getting eliminated from postseason possibilities. Front office moves, more power for Chip Kelly, a new personnel guy, Ed Manowitz, promoted from within, a diminished role for former GM Howie Roseman. Your thoughts about these moves and the big question, will it work?
Well, you know, they kept this real secret. I'm up there, you know, twice a week, and I did not hear any rumblings, not that I'm that close, but I heard nothing of the rumblings between Hallie and Chip. And I know Hallie a little better than I know Chip just because I've been around him longer. And I looked at it from this perspective. I think it could be more good news than bad because if Chip fought that hard to get that power, that means he's going to be around. And my concern was, especially towards the end of the season, you know, Chip didn't make it to the playoffs. The press was a little hard on him towards the end. You could see that he was, you know, getting a little antsy with some of his answers. And, you know, you have to wonder, you know, why do I need this? Why don't I go back to 12-1, 11-1, you know, 11-0 and play college football, which I really, really know, and I don't have to, you know, take this kind of aggravation. But I take it as he's in for at least a couple more years to prove that he can, you know, move this team forward in the league. I don't know, you know, I don't know who made the decisions on some of the draft choices, but, you know, Marcus Smith was a big mistake. I know some guys that are into this, you know, evaluation business, and they had him late second round, early third, and I don't know how that happened that the Eagles took him in the first round. And for a guy that could not get on the field, even as a special teamer with that kind of talent, really tells you a lot about the bad move that they made. Now, maybe he'll come along, but you certainly expect a first-rounder to contribute in your offense or defense and certainly on special teams, and that did not occur. So I got to believe that was part of the problem, and Chip wants to be able to pick his own people. And, you know, who's going to argue with that? This guy has been an innovator, and gosh knows what he can do when he gets his own people in here.
Well, speaking of the draft, what would your thoughts be on packaging what it's going to take, which is going to take a ton, if he's going to try to get up in that number one and two or two spot and get Marcus Mariota? Would you be willing to maybe mortgage the franchise a little bit to try to get one player? I mean, there's a lot more needs on that football team than one guy.
Yeah, there is. It's a great question. You know, if it wasn't for Marcus Mariota, this team would definitely have to look at corners and safeties. They've got to face the Dallas Cowboys with a super receiver in Dez Bryant. They got to face the Skins now with DeSean Jackson, who just loves to play against them, and the New York Giants with Odell Beckham, who I think is better than all of them. And then you got Victor Cruz coming back. That's six games, fellas, with three guys that you really haven't been able to defend very well in the last 2 years. Actually, three guys, counting Beckham being the fourth, because Victor Cruz ate him alive, too, when he was with the Giants. So they're going to have to do something. But I would say this. I would say that Marcus Mariota could be a franchise quarterback. What I think is special about him outside of his athletic ability, everybody talks about his quick mind. And you can't train a quick mind. If the guy's got a quick mind like that, and it looks like he does because he makes very, very quick decisions and very good decisions. You see his completion record versus, I think he had two interceptions going into the final game. I mean, that's incredible, the number of completions versus two interceptions. This guy could be a really good quarterback for a long time, and I would believe, if I know anything about Chip, he's got plan A, B, and C. And B might be to trade Foles to, you know, somebody like the St. Louis Rams, who are looking for a quarterback, and move up from 20 to 10. Now, I hear that's 450 points, and that's worth a second-round draft pick. But he might do that to get to 10 and then leapfrog from there somewhere. Now, he's not exactly in the red zone at 10, but he's looking to score from there. So I think Chip is going to pull out all the stops. That's my own personal opinion. To get Mariota, because he knows what this guy could mean as a franchise quarterback.
But you know, and I think I agree with you based on everything that we've heard. We had Mark Eckel on last week, and Ray Didinger also told us the same thing. I think everybody's on board that that's the way they're going to go. But I guess one of my concerns, and you mentioned it earlier, is if Chip ends up not staying here, say for five years, he stays 5 years. Then do we have a quarterback that's a system quarterback and we don't have the system?
Yeah, well, you know, that could be a problem. Yeah, that could be a problem. And, you know, it might be another glimpse of Chip. If he gets Mariota, it may be another situation where he's planning on staying a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to think, what's missing from Chip's resume is, you know, an NFL championship. You know, right now, you know, the NFC championship is missing from his. I think the guy, as dedicated as he is toward football, would like to have those ultimate, you know, honors. I really do. So I thought the first move was the fact that he wanted more power. He fought for it. He got it. You know, now they're going to be, you know, there'll be nobody to blame but him if these draft choices don't turn out to be people that can play the first year and fit into his system.
I gotcha. Well, hey, so we don't take up too much of your time, we did want to run by you. Last time you were with us in late in 2014, we did a thing called the Rapid Fire Hot Seat. We put you on there and asked you some questions, and We've changed that up just a little bit here in 2015 to what we call 10 and 5. And basically, you get asked 10 questions. You have 5 minutes to answer them. You up for that? And Chet will beat you up on it if you're good to go.
All right, here we go.
10 questions, 5 minutes, so about 30 seconds per. Kevin Riley, number one, you've seen them all, I'm sure. How high does Super Bowl 49 rank on the list of great Super Bowls?
Number three.
Oh, okay. What are the top two? I got to ask you then.
Well, I can't deny that watching the Jets and Joe Namath in that game, and the other one was a classic where Green Bay beat the Dallas Cowboys in the Frozen Tundra Bowl. I just thought those two were just great football games, but I'll put this one at number three.
All right. Now, four Super Bowl wins for Bill Belichick and Tom Brady together. Does this make them the best coach-quarterback tandem ever?
Ooh. You know, Bart Starr and Vince Lombardi were pretty darn good, but they didn't have that many Super Bowls, so I'll have to say yes.
All right. Our official number three now. You played 2 years with the Eagles and then finished your NFL career as a Patriot. How are Eagles fans different from Patriots fans?
They're just a little more passionate, but I'm telling you, I was really impressed with the passion of the New England Patriots fans. They have a lot in common. I would say that the Eagle fans probably are just a little more knowledgeable about the football because their roots are deeper and it's handed down from generation to generation. But I was treated extremely well when I got traded up to New England. And there was a lot of Irish in that town, as you know, in the Boston area. So Kevin Patrick Riley didn't hurt me either, having that name.
Good point, yeah. Hey, that season with the Patriots, you had your one and only NFL regular season interception. Give us all the details of that pick.
Well, it was unbelievable. It was only my second start. I was playing for a guy named Steve King, who had just had a bad ankle injury. And we were playing against the Buffalo Bills. Joe Ferguson was the quarterback. They were moving right down the field. And their fullback went out for a down-and-out pass. And I was laying off in a little bit. And Ferguson just happened to loft it a little too soft down at the 9-yard line. And I took it and I went 91 yards. And about the 50-yard line, guys, I thought to myself, O.J. Simpson is on this field somewhere and he must have the angle. And at that point, I picked it up whatever I had left in me. It was like running from the cops. I scored the touchdown, but Sam Hunt, unfortunately, had clipped somebody at about the 15-yard line. So they brought it out to there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw they gave you a 54-yard return officially. So
yeah, something like
still
that.
Still not bad. All right. Now, as an Eagle, you played with one of my favorite players of all time. Why isn't Harold Carmichael in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Boy, that's a good question. And I'll second that with why isn't Bill Berge been brought up for that?
Yeah.
These two guys, in my opinion, should be in the Hall of Fame. You know what's interesting about Harold? You know, I used to have to play against him when we had goal line defense, and he was almost uncoverable when Roman Gabriel or Mike Barilla would throw him that fade pattern into the end zone. The guy was 6'8". We played off-season basketball, and I believe he could have played in the NBA if he really would have put his mind to it. He was that good of an athlete. And I thought, well, this will be a prototype, you know, 6'8", 6'7", guys. We haven't seen another 6'8 receiver since Harold Carmichael. I find that with the size of guys getting bigger all the time, and that just tells you what a great athlete he was.
And he's still 18th all-time in touchdown receptions with 79. Sorry. Number six, you lost your left arm and shoulder to a rare cancer when your playing career ended. Now you do motivational speaking to others who've lost limbs. What is the main message you deliver to those folks, Kevin?
Consistent, persistent, and don't change any of your goals. So many good people will try to tell you in empathy, good friends, family members, you know, they'll try to tell you, oh, you're going to be limited down, and here's what we'll do for you and all that. And, you know, people will change their goals in life, and I found out through my experience that doesn't have to happen. You'll find out what you can do, you find out what you can do, and you'll find out that you can do more than you ever thought you could. And my real basic thought pattern is that the human spirit is stronger than anything that can happen to it. Unfortunately, we only find out when we're in crisis situations.
Good advice. Hey, if the Eagles don't trade away their first-round draft pick, what position player do the Eagles select at number 20?
Well, they have to get a cornerback. They absolutely have to get a cornerback who's physical. We missed Brian Dawkins so bad, that type of player. There's nobody out there that intimidates anybody. And I thought the Eagles' defensive backs, for the most part, they had good coverage on people. They never turned their heads around. And if you watch some of the players that made it through the playoffs, all of these guys that are defensive backs, when they got good position, they had their heads turned around. And they just got to get, you know, more physical corners and people that can intercept the football. But I don't know what the coaching is going on there with them not turning their heads. But, you know, you're not going to have anything but an incomplete pass or a completed pass when guys aren't looking back towards the football. You're not going to have any interceptions. Deion Sanders would roll over in the studio if anybody asked him to do that.
Hmm. Number 8, Kevin, will Tiger Woods ever win another major?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I think he's done. I think that 82 the other day told you everything you needed to know. Plus, the guys coming up. Oh, my gosh, these guys coming up. I just saw with a leading driver is averaging 315 on his drives. And I forget the guy's name. I never heard of him. But he's like in the top 10 in now ranking in the world. But, oh, my goodness, he's got no shot now, I don't believe, unless he really gets his game back. And who wants to work as hard as they did at his age when he did as his 20? I don't think it's going to happen.
I agree. Number 9, Kevin, the obligatory question everyone is asked after watching the Super Bowl, your favorite commercial?
Oh, my favorite commercial was the puppy commercial. They used 8 puppies for that ad, I found out.
Yeah, I saw that. I like the Liam Neeson one for the game where he did his taken speech in the coffee shop. That was pretty cool. And finally, number 10, what is the best movie ever made about football?
Oh, the best movie ever made about football. I could pick the boxing one. I could pick the basketball one.
Let me give you the candidates. North Dallas 40, The Blind Side, The Longest Yard, Remember the Titans.
I was going to say Remember the Titans, but you know what? North Dallas 40 was all about the guys that I played against.
Oh, yeah, late 70s, yep.
And so we had a guard who played 1 year with us. His name escapes me. I'll think of it in a second. And he came from Dallas, and he told us who was supposed to be who in the movie was portraying a real member of the team. And that was really, really interesting.
Good movie. I'm going to watch it again.
Blaine Nye?
Oh, yeah, Blaine Nye. I remember that name.
Blaine Nye. It wasn't Blaine Nye. Gosh, it's right on the tip of my tongue. He was all pro for a while. We got him to, the last year, 2 years of his career where he was going downhill a little bit.
Yeah.
But the Goody Two-Shoes quarterback was Roger Staubach.
Oh, how about that?
And
good stuff and a good choice.
The quarterback that was a little bit of a bad boy was Don Meredith.
Right? Oh, of course. All right. Hey, great stuff. Very Kevin good. Riley, thanks for playing 10-5.
All right, guys. Well, listen, I'm going to eat my dinner now, but it was great being on with you guys.
We appreciate it, Kevin.
As always, we appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us. Always great input, and we really appreciate you.
All right, buddies. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, man. All right, Chet, let's thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network for the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Okay, let's give our trivia question again to win the Gino Marchetti signed black and white 8x10 photo courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles to the first person that calls in and correctly answers the question. The Eagles have played in two Super Bowls. Who is the team's all-time leading receiving yards leader in those Super Bowls? Okay, who is the last? Who is the team's all-time leading receiver in those two Super Bowls? Again, our call-in to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855.
And did you say receiving yards or
great
catches?
Information. What's that?
Was that receiving yards or catches?
Well, actually, it's the same guy, but the question is for yards. But the
okay, just wanted to make sure
it is the same. It is the same person that did both.
Okay.
Okay. You got it.
Got it.
Actually, we have a caller probably to answer that already. This was a kickoff. This was an easy one. Hello, welcome to the show. Who do we have?
Terrell Owens.
Oh, who are we talking to? Who is this? Hello, are you there? Well, whoever it is we lost, Chet. Well, hopefully they'll call back. They hung up on us or dropped the call.
I think he knew it too, so.
I think he does know it, so we'll see. Yep. But, hey, what'd you think about some of Kevin's comments? I thought some interesting stuff.
Yeah, I agreed with him absolutely on pretty much everything that he said. He knows his football, and, yeah.
One thing for sure, though, Kevin does not seem to have lost any of his zest for Chip Kelly. You know, he was very upfront with us when we had him on the last time, and the same again tonight. He definitely appears to be on board with Chip and the plan.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, I'm hoping that it works out. I know you're still lukewarm on Chip, but this is going to be a big test these next 2 years for Chip Kelly, the, you know, head honcho, because, you know, everything's going to fall on him now. If they draft a bunch of guys who are busts, like a Marcus Smith looks like he might be, it's going to be all on Chip. You can't blame anybody else. You know, hopefully this Ed Manowitz, who a lot of guys like Ruben Frank, Mark Eckel do like, they do say, yeah, he's young, but he's got a lot of knowledge and he'll be a big plus. Hopefully he will work out. I'm still a little leery of how it's going to work with Howie still in the organization doing the, you know, accounting stuff. And I don't know, can he coexist with Chip Kelly? That's been one of the big topics on Sports Talk Radio for the last couple of weeks. We shall see. So it's going to be very interesting off season and, you know, into next season to see how this all plays out.
Yep. Well, I think absolutely, as we've said before, from now till August, till camp starts, is the most critical time of the Kelly era. But what goes on in this draft? What goes on in free agency? Does he make a quarterback move? I think we're at the crossroads with what's going on. And, you know, hopefully the right decisions are going to be made. And even with Manowitz in place, it's Kelly's show. So, as you said, it's all on him.
Yeah,
well,
and
hey, listen,
we've got
our caller back, I think. So let's try this again. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, who do we have?
This is Kevin. How are you?
Hey, Kevin. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great.
A trivia question answer or just a question comment?
I do have the trivia question answer.
Okay, it's an easy one, isn't it? It would be
so.
Terrell Owens. Nine catches for 122 yards in that game.
Yeah, he went. He was unbelievable in that game.
You will be the winner of the Gino Marchetti picture.
No, that's great. He was one of my dad's favorites growing up.
Oh, Gino, yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, because, you know, he was
88 years old, by the way, in January.
Oh, wow. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Tremendous player.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, hey, thanks for the call. We'll get that right out to you. And did you have any comments? Did you get to listen to Kevin? Did you have any comments on his items?
I turned it on right about at the 10 and 5 segment. So I missed the beginning piece of the show. So I'll have to catch that on the archive. But I definitely didn't think about it until right about 7:25. I was like, crap, I missed the beginning of the show. So I.
Well, we got to get your priorities in order, my friend.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Phil, do we have Kevin's contact info, or, you know,
we do. I've got him all covered up. We're ready to go.
Okay,
we'll get
good.
That out to him. All right, Kevin, appreciate it, and thanks for listening.
Yep, thank you. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Well, Chet, hey, we talk about this every week, and February 19th is now, like, really right around the corner. No major moves yet by the Phils. Kyle Kendrick is now gone. I don't know that that caused you any sleep last night, but, you know, we're down to the wire. The Papelbon rumors seem to have quieted. The Cole Hamels rumors have quieted. We've added Chad Billingsley, who's coming off of Tommy John. Jeez, I just don't know.
It's a tough team to get excited about. Our favorite GM, Ruben Amaro, of course, that would be, has tried to sell or tell some media types that the Papelbon trade talks are still alive. That may or may not be posturing on his part. I don't know. I'm hoping that it does happen, just because I think it's time for more new faces to be out there on the field. You know, Papelbon did have a very good year last year. For the most part, he was a good citizen. And, you know, Kenny Giles said he learned a lot from him. But I don't need to see Jonathan Papelbon again, you know, saving 30 games on a 65 or 70 win team. I just don't see the point. So get what you can for him and move on. As for Kyle Kendrick, I wish him well. He spent a lot of years here and gave the team a lot of innings to go with his 79 or 80 wins, whatever it was. Not sure that Colorado is the best spot for a pitcher to go, but hey, as I said, I wish him well. And I do hope we see some more moves over the next month or so. And, you know, I think I said this last week, even though they're probably not going to be a good team, I get excited when spring training actually starts. So I'm looking forward to February 19th.
Yeah, me too. And another couple of weeks, we're going to have to make our predictions. And I guess the over-under for us is going to have to be, we're going to be under 100 losses or over 100 losses, because I just don't see it being a whole lot better than that.
Pretty sad, yep.
Yeah. Well, you know, and speaking of spring training and, you know, being down here in Florida, and I actually live about a mile right on the same road as the Detroit Tigers spring training complex. And the people, you know, the snowbirds, as we call them, are already down, and all the Detroit people are already here. And you know, they've got they're excited about what they've got going on. And spring always does bring hope to everybody, and it's a lot of fun. Nothing like going to a spring training game when, you know, it's 10 in the north and it's 75 at the ballpark down here. And, you know, the worst seat in the house down here is like being at a high school game. And, you know, from the way the stadiums are located compared to what you can get when you're at home. And so it is fun time, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll take a bad day in Florida anytime. You know, I could live with that. I'm getting more tired of the cold weather every year as I get older, so Florida's sounding better and better.
No, I hear you. Wait, what about the Flyers? Four in a row. They're back to 500, 22-22-7. There seemed to be some life in those last four games. And, you know, last Wednesday when we talked, they were in 12th place. Now they're in 10th place. Not a whole lot of improvement, but it's only been four games, but they still have 10 points to make up to get to that final playoff spot, and 31 games remaining. They're going to have to play well. Any chance? Has your thoughts changed any from last week to this?
Well, before I get to that, first of all, I'm going to dispute that they're back at 500. They have 22 wins and 22 regulation losses, yeah, but that seven, that represents losses, either in overtime or via a shootout. So they've lost 29 out of those 51 games. So I'm not going to call that 500. Sorry. Now, Claude Giroux, he may think they're a playoff team. That's what he said Monday night. But I'm still a doubter. I hope they prove me wrong. They've won four in a row, as you noted. But they are still 10 points out of the final wild card spot with those 31 games left. And keep in mind, too, their next three games are against the Islanders, Capitals, and Canadiens, three teams that are all well ahead of them in the standings. Now, if you win two of those three, I'll be impressed and maybe a bit more optimistic, but I just don't see it. I just don't think there's enough talent or enough time left in the season for them to make up that 10 points. I mean, Steve Mason's been playing well. They're actually starting to get some secondary scoring here and there, but 10 points is a lot to make up in the NHL.
Yeah, absolutely. Wade, we have another caller. Let's take a call. Hello, welcome to the show. Who do we have?
Hey, guys, it's Frank.
Hey, Frank.
Hey, Frank, how are you?
Great, pleasure talking to you. Good show tonight. Really good stuff with Riley. I got in about 20 after or so, had an opportunity to listen up on that. Good stuff there, Chuck. Good job.
Thanks.
Hey, I wanted to kind of touch base with you on something here with the when we go back to this Super Bowl that you know Bill and I have kind of been going back a little back and forth on some issues with this game. What's your opinion on this? I mean, I think something that's being overlooked here is, you know, I know there's a lot of Tom Brady and Bill Belichick haters out there. I, for one, am not one that hates them. I'm not a Patriots fan by any means, but I just look at what happened last year with the same defense that dismantled Manning, and then I watch Tom Brady march that team down 14, and just pick this team apart all day long. But then when it mattered, this guy was just unbelievable. And the bottom line was, you know, that so-called great defense didn't show up.
I'm going to give
Tom Brady a lot of credit. I mean, and that's one of the knocks on Peyton Manning throughout his entire career. He's got just the one Super Bowl win, and he's frequently come up small, shall we say, in the big games, whereas Tom Brady has four Super Bowl rings now. The other two, he was pretty darn close. I mean, we had the David Tyree amazing catch and the one that cost him. So, you know, Brady's a winner, so let's give some credit there where it's due.
Did you watch the replay by any chance last night? I did not watch the replay.
No.
Yeah, the replay was on last night. And what I thought was just absolutely amazing about that is he went. Oh God, I think he went like his last 10 for 15 or something like that, and those throws that he threw were right between the numbers on every single throw that he had. It was unbelievable. It was just unbelievable to watch. That's the type of offense that we have here, and what we're lacking is that type of quarterback that has that accuracy that can absolutely set this thing on fire right now.
It would be nice.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, I don't know you're going to find too many guys with that kind of accuracy because – obviously, Tom Brady's special, and he, you know, to me, the thing that was made that so successful is they never once got out of their game plan. Even when they were behind, he was still, I call it dink and dunk. It's that short, you know, it's a short passing game. He rarely stretches the field, but he finds those guys open. He finds them in the seams, and you're right, pinpoint accuracy, and he just moves the chains. And there was never a question. It didn't look like it. Well, I guess there was in the last 50 seconds when he had his head hanging. But for the most part, when he was on the field, it didn't look like there was any question in his mind his team was going to score.
No, and that's pretty obvious what this offense could do. When you give an opportunity to a receiver to run after the catch, that's just amazing to watch when it goes clicking on all cylinders. But, hey, look, good show. Just wanted to chime in real quick and talk at you next week.
Thanks,
okay,
Frank. Appreciate it.
Well, hey, Chet, speaking of next week, I think you have a special announcement for our listeners and also for me. You got a surprise for me as well. So go ahead and tell me what's going on.
Yeah, Bill, sorry I didn't mention this in our pre-show meeting. Oh, wait, we didn't have one. But, yes, we have a very special guest lined up for next week. Another Hall of Famer, in fact. A guy who is synonymous with Philadelphia basketball and an inaugural member of the Philadelphia Sports Hall of Fame back in 2004. That would be the legendary Sonny Hill. So we're going to talk to Sonny about his amazing life, the Sonny Hill League, and, of course, the state of the 76ers and the NBA in general ahead of the All-Star game a week from Sunday.
Wow. Well, let me ask you this. Can we just schedule him for like 2 hours?
I'll tell you, the guy loves to talk. I told him a half hour, but we're going to have to cut him off after like every, you know, 1 minute or so, because he'll go on forever. So it's going to be a challenge for both of us, because he's a storyteller.
Well, I would love to talk to him for about 2 hours just about high school basketball players from back when we were younger. And the Palestra, as you know, was my first job mm-hmm. that I ever worked at. And I could talk to him forever. And never met the man.
Plus, you know he's going to have stories about Wilt and Guy Rogers and, you know, the old Big Five days. So, boy, it's going to be a fun half hour with Sonny.
Cannot wait. Absolutely. Got me excited already, and we're a week away. Fantastic. Hey, good pull out, my friend.
Yeah, I've met Sonny 3 times at the Sixers Beach Bash down in Avalon, and you know he's always very cordial, great to talk to. So I mentioned it to him in August, and he said, yeah, sure, give me a call or connect with me, and I could probably do it. So I finally got around to doing it last week, and I talked to him yesterday, and he said, yeah, what do you want from me? Just let me know. And so he said, call me next Tuesday to remind him, and he'll be there. So
fantastic.
Good.
Can't wait. That's exciting. All right. Hey, Chad, I wanted to tell you, our friend Carl over at Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown, as you know, they're celebrating their 20th anniversary. They're doing it with a bang. They've got signings just consistently. They've got Flyers rookie goalie Rob Zepp this weekend on the 6th, and former defenseman Shel Samuelson on February the 18th. And in between that, on Valentine's Day, which, by the way, Chet, just in case you forgot this important date, is February the 14th, Valentine's Day, okay?
I will mark my calendar, yes.
As you should. They'll have the bookend offensive tackles, John Runyon and Trey Thomas, both in the store at the same time, and them two big humans get in there. There won't be a whole lot of room for anybody else. There's some big fellas. Carl's does a great job getting guests in. We hope you can support their effort. They have a Facebook page, a website. Check out all the times and details and signing costs and so forth. But looking forward to those shows over there at Carl's.
And if you're ever in Havertown, make sure you stop in, because he's got a great little shop with all sorts of amazing collectibles to check out, especially if you're a Philadelphia sports fan. But he's got them from all around the country, but heavy on the Philadelphia stuff, as you would expect.
Yep, almost like a kid in a candy store. If you're a memorabilia autograph guy, when you go in that store, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, how much money could I spend if I had that much?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, we talked about the Flyers being hot. How about our Sixers, who have won 3 in a row at home now and 6 out of 10 at home? 11 wins on the season. They're kind of exciting.
Well, what do you think? I mean, the thing that I like, and I haven't seen all their games, I do try to watch all the Flyers games, but I don't always watch all the Sixers games. But the one thing that I see that I really like, and it's just about every guy on the squad, is they're playing hard. And that's all you can ask. You know, if the talent is what
yep.
the talent is, but if you go out and you play hard, good things usually happen to you. That's what we tell every team we ever coach.
They're playing hard, and the defense is getting better and better. I know Brett Brown's been working on that. That's obviously been, and they're making some great steals now. Michael Carter-Williams has really picked it up once again. He's getting some triple-doubles. I think he's had like 5 double-doubles this year or more, including one last night. So they're looking good, and I think the future is definitely bright for the Sixers, and I want to hear what Sonny's going to say about that next week, so that should be fun.
Yeah, it should. And like you say, all you can do, forget about how many ping pong balls you get or your tank job or whatever you want to call it. You put a bunch of kids on the court that are playing for their NBA future, whether it's in Philadelphia or somewhere else. And, you know, maybe hopefully they can stick somewhere else if it's not here. But, you know, all you can do is go watch a bunch of kids playing hard. And that's the exciting thing to me.
Absolutely.
The draft will take care of the draft.
Hey, can I do a little rant about something here? Can I do a rant?
Certainly.
All right. I saw this news a couple hours ago. The Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame today. Yes, the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame announcing its 2015 induction class. Carlos Delgado, a longtime Toronto Blue Jay who holds the franchise record for homers with, I think, 336. Absolutely, that's fine. Felipe Alou, a decent big league player, and then 10 years as a manager of the Montreal Expos. Sure, I'm okay with that. But now the two other inductees, Corey Koskie, and former Phil Matt Stairs, really? I know they were both born in Canada and had decent, fairly long major league careers, but Hall of Fame worthy, even the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame? No, I don't think so. What's your take?
Well, I would have to probably look up Corey Koski to begin with. So I'll have to go from there on him. And I am actually looking up Matt Stairs as we speak. 262 batting average, 265 career home runs, a little better than I thought. He hit 26 and 38 in 1998-99 and had 100 RBI years in those 2 years, which
yeah, he was around for
that.
A long time, too, so that helped pad the numbers. He played a long time in the major leagues.
Yeah, he actually, part of 19 big league seasons, played all the way till 43 years old. So I guess his numbers they're not Hall of Fame worthy, certainly, but not a bad career for Matt Stairs.
I guess the standards are a little lower in Canada, though, for the Hall of Fame.
I would think so. Well, hey, on that real quick, I wanted to see if you saw the article that came out the other day on Jim Bunning talking about being part of the Dick Allen committee. Did you see that?
I did not see that. I did not.
Yeah, he said that it was the most helpless experience of his life. And he was first to talk about Dick Allen because of A, being for Allen. It went out alphabetically. And he got like 6 minutes to talk, and he thought that he really had done a good job. And, you know, he's a politician, so obviously he's a very solid speaker to begin with. And it just, when it was all said and done, the way the whole thing voted, the writers, in his opinion, the writers don't even have any business voting on these guys because they never saw most of them play. And, the fact that Bob Watson didn't show up and Dombrowski from the Tigers ended up showing up, which gave the Tigers two representatives because Al Kaline was already there. And, you know, Jim Bunning didn't know who voted for who, but he just felt like a guy like Watson would have voted for Allen. And in his mind, that was the key, along with Tony Oliva. Would have gotten in had Bob Watson been there. So, you look up that article. I'm sure you can Google it and find it. It was just in the last two or three days, and it was very good. And it was a rant by Jim Bunning on how disappointed he was in it, and now you have to wait 3 years, and now you don't know who the committee will be. You know, it may not be Bunning who goes in there to try to sell Dick Allen the next time.
Yeah, well, hopefully he'll have better luck in 2017 when they do it again.
That's right. Well, hey, that's bringing us close to the top of the hour, so let's thank our special guest, Kevin Riley, and Carl's Cards for their continuing support of the show, as well as Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. Well, Chad, I can't wait until next week. You got me really excited about Sunny Hill. I'm going to start to jot my questions down already, so let's be ready for that.
Yep.
All right. Well, for Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, February 11th, along with Sunny Hill. You can listen through our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.